Item number 10, Mr. Brian Rechtenbaugh, number 171334.
I'll slow down for this one a little bit. So this is, to get started, this is an after-the-fact authorization request from Mr. Rechtenbaugh, in which he filled a portion of wetlands on his property and is requesting to retain it. And I'll go through a number of different votes that we will need. So this is in the city of Chesapeake, and so you are acting as the wetlands board for this process. So Mr. Rechtenbaugh is requesting after-the-fact authorization to retain fill within portions of jurisdictional wetlands and 150 linear feet of riprap revetment to aid in flood mitigation and to impact vegetated wetlands to construct on-site mitigation along a tributary to the southern branch Elizabeth River at his home at 700 Seagrass Reach in Chesapeake. Again, this project requires a wetlands board permit. Not too far from where we were previously with the Homeowners Association. This is a small tributary off the southern branch Elizabeth River. Zoom in a little bit. 700 Seagrass Reach is the property here. And you can see that the house was, most of these houses have all been built fairly close to the marsh and at low elevations. In 2016, after Matthew and after experiencing some really large tides, the applicant noticed that tidal waters were getting pretty close to his home. So he decided to raise the elevation of his property by bringing in about 2.5 feet of fill. He was not aware that the marsh area was protected and inadvertently filled some of that marsh area in the attempt to protect his property from tidal flooding.
Before you go any further, how old is his residence? Do you know?
That is a good question. From what I could tell from aerials, it's pre-2000s.
I'll get. But if you want to, when? What year?
1999.
Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Perfect. Okay. The vote for today is one. Mr. Rechtenbaugh's author is asking for authorization to retain his fill. The options are to retain the fill or to remove the fill and bring the wetlands back to pre-existing conditions. If the commission votes to retain the fill, then staff recommends mitigation or compensation for the square footage of the fill. And there's two options for that. There's paying at a wetland mitigation bank, or there's compensation of building wetlands on site. Mr. Rechtenbaugh is requesting to build wetlands on site to make up for those impacts. And the third portion of the vote, staff is recommending a civil charge in lieu of further enforcement. And so the third portion of the vote will be for the civil charge. So in 2016, I got a call from the city of Chesapeake that some unauthorized construction had taken place. At our initial site visit, there was obvious fill on the property as well as revetment that had been constructed. It was difficult to see how much wetlands were actually there prior to the fill. You can see that there was a marsh that was adjoining the property, and there was some of that marsh was already starting to grow through that revetment. And here's some other pictures you can see here. So the marsh is adjacent to the property is dominated by Phragmites, which is the invasive species. However, there are other native species that are mixed within that. So following my initial site visit, Virginia Institute of Marine Science and I went onto the site to try and calculate how much of those wetlands were actually filled. In that process, we used an auger where we looked for the soil horizon, where you could see the difference in which was the original soil and which was the fill, and came up with an estimate, a square footage from there. After we estimated the fill, we sent Mr. Rechtenbaugh a letter asking him to either remove the fill and restore his wetlands, and his violation would be finalized, or to fill out a joint permit application requesting to retain it, and then we could figure out the mitigation compensation and the civil penalties associated with that. So Mr. Rechtenbaugh chose to fill out the joint permit application to retain his fill. We received that. We held a public hearing. There were no comments at the public hearing. He originally wanted to go ahead and pay the mitigation bank. It is $21 a square foot at this point. We have about 1,250 square feet of wetlands that he did impact. And so he has chosen to build on site those at least 1,250 square feet on his property to make up for his impacts. So in the joint permit application, just a quick drawing. So here is the revetment that he did construct. You can see that there is the tidal channel here, the fringe marsh, his home, and the revetment. This entire area was filled and moved out. So Mr. Rechtenbaugh is proposing to construct his tidal mitigation in a wooded area that he has on property. After he had proposed this, he did find out that that wooded area is a non-tidal wetland that is managed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So we have been talking with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, who have verbally told us that they would allow him to build his wetlands in non-tidal wetlands if he mitigates for those wetlands as well. And a drawing here that you can see of the 1,400 square feet of wetlands that he would like to build on property.
Mr. Bowman.
Ma'am.
May I ask?
Yes, ma'am. I think the same one I was going to ask. Go ahead.
So is the tidal wetland mitigation on site?
So this would be the tidal wetland.
I'm sorry, the non-tidal.
It would not. It would be at a...
In lieu of fee fund?
Right. At a mitigation bank at a higher ratio than he actually impacted. That's verbally. My condition, one of the conditions I'm going to recommend is that we receive that authorization prior to moving forward. If you so choose to approve the project.
Thank you.
Okay, so here is a picture of the tidal mitigation, the mitigation area on site. So there were a few trees removed in preparation of the tidal mitigation area. This would be the 1,400 square feet. We received VIM's comments. There were four main points in their comments. The first is the use of forested wetlands is not a recommended approach to mitigation. We like to use uplands to mitigate for wetlands. If the board so chooses to allow on-site mitigation and for him to retain the fill, VIMS recommends a few things to make this marsh a more ecologically functioning marsh. One is to revise his plans to include more natural tidal connections, to reduce the elevation of the proposed marsh, and that's to prevent Phragmites from growing, and to include a Phragmites control plan. So when reviewing after the fact applications, staff considers whether the project would likely have been favorably reviewed had the application been considered prior to construction. In this case, staff would have worked with the homeowner to move fill and the revetment landward of the wetlands to reduce wetland impacts to the greatest extent possible. We see a lot of projects like this in Chesapeake and the city of Norfolk where people need to raise the elevation around their homes. Generally, we work with them. We make a line of wetlands, and we ask them to keep their fill and usually a knee wall or something of that sort behind that wetland line, which protects the wetlands and allows them to protect their homes. Had the homeowner applied for a permit prior to construction, they would have most likely been able to increase the elevation of the land and mitigate flooding around their home without affecting the vegetated wetlands, in our opinion. While staff would have not supported the design of the project as it was built, we understand that the removal of the fill and the revetment would be financially burdensome for the homeowner. Additionally, it is reasonable to believe that the filled marsh was a lower value marsh, as it was Phragmites, and was partially shaded. There were trees there. So some of it could have been vegetated, some of it may not have been. We can't tell at this point. And most likely it was mowed inadvertently because there was that gradient between planted grass and wetlands. So for staff recommendation, staff is recommending approval of the project of retaining the fill with a minimum of 1,250 square feet of new tidal wetlands to be constructed on site, conditioned on the finalization of the following. issuance of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer permit for work within the forested wetlands, and final approval by staff of a revised on-site mitigation plan to be reviewed by the Virginia Institute of Marine Science for a better, more functioning on-site mitigation plan. Or approval of the retaining fill with 1,200 square feet of credits to be purchased at the New Mill Creek Tidal Mitigation Bank. We also are recommending that the commission assess a civil charge of $6,000 for the unauthorized fill of tidal wetlands based on the findings of a moderate degree of noncompliance and a moderate degree of impact. If the applicant does not agree to pay the civil charge amount, then we recommend that the commission decides to assess or fails to pay it within 30 days of the date of this meeting, then staff recommends referral of this matter to the Office of the Attorney General to seek civil penalties pursuant to 28.2-1213. And I'm going to leave this here. This is the matrix in deciding for civil penalties. So we look at deviation of noncompliance factors as well as the impacts. Staff feels that they were a moderate deviation. There were no permits associated with this construction. However, the homeowner didn't realize that he needed permits and was not familiar with the protection of tidal wetlands. And it is a moderate impact in our opinion, because in general, we probably could have done this project without impacting tidal wetlands.
Any questions of Ms. Peabody, this matter? Ms. Everett?
Because wetlands are dependent upon elevation and hydrology, soil type, is it more likely that they would succeed in a forested area where sunlight might be an issue?
That is.
As well, than restoring what was there, obviously, with excavation or removing fill?
It's a very good question, and something that we have been discussing quite a bit. The way that we generally recommend to applicants when it comes to mitigation is that the first option is obviously not to impact the wetlands. Second option is to go to a wetlands mitigation bank, because those banks have been thoroughly vetted. They have a long life of making sure that they stay stable through us and the Army Corps of Engineers. And that's why generally we recommend going to the bank. The banks can be pricey, however. And the third option, and for the reasons that you just mentioned, that's why it's the third option, is on-site mitigation. Because there are a lot of factors that have to be perfect to get this to be a good, long-term functioning wetland.
Your follow-up, Ms. Everett?
But I guess in terms of where the wetlands actually were,
right,
versus this adjacent portion of the parcel, what was staff's reluctance to say, you know, you have to restore them by, it's a matter of removing the fill material, excavating the fill material, and then replanting, or right? Is that significantly less expensive by orders of magnitude, or why wouldn't staff recommend that?
Yes. That's a good question as well. So really, this is because the homeowner feels like he would really like to keep it, and he feels like he can mitigate for those wetlands in other ways, and that those wetlands can be built somewhere else while protecting his property. And that is why we're here, for that decision for you to make.
Thank you.
Further questions of Rachel at this time? We'll hear from the gentleman, and we may hear from you again.
Yes.
Would you come forward? Good afternoon, sir. Would you raise your right hand? You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
You state your name for the record, please.
Ryan Birkenbach.
All right, sir. Can you
First of all, I'd like to go on the record to say that Rachel Peabody has been great to work with for the last 2 years. I'm the third person to say that. She deserves it.
Mr. Watkinson, you taking note of that? Yeah, good. Okay.
Secondly, I'd like to thank David Kletzik. He performed the surveys on the property. He did over 80 core samples to determine where the jurisdictional line was, and then ultimately derived that we encroached approximately 450 square feet.
Okay. So if you would tell us the story and...
Yes, sir. like Rachel said, we live on the tributary of the Elizabeth River, and especially in the months of... We've owned the property since 2005, and we, especially in the months of September, October, when we get these astronomical high tides, we're getting water very uncomfortably close to our crawl space. So I hired a contractor to raise the level at the edge of the property and make a riprap barrier. But there was some miscommunication where I thought he was taking care of everything, and as far as permit-wise.
Did he ask you at any time whether you got a permit, or did you ask him at any time did he get a permit?
I did not ask him.
Neither one asked the other?
No, sir.
Okay.
I do work out of area. So he was doing the project during their work week when I was out of area. And I wasn't there on site to tell him the boundaries, but he went further than I really anticipated him going. And we ended up encroaching into the marsh area, about 1,250 square feet. So, because of the dirt we brought in, I think that caused us to get unwanted attention. And the project lasted over a month. And in the end, I think the CHSP called UMRC, and then it turned into an investigation. And yes, we determined that we did encroach on the marsh. Marsh is primarily right behind our property, Fred Mighty's. So it's a very invasive grass, very hard to kill.
Did you know what Phragmites was before this started?
I never heard the term, but through this process, I've unfortunately learned what Phragmites is, and it's not a good grass.
Yeah.
But that is primarily what we encroached on. There is some needlebrush in there, but the primary invasive grass is Phragmites. So when David Klesik did his core samples, he was looking for the Phragmites rhizomes and so forth in his samples, and that's pretty much what he found in his core samples that we did. In fact, most of the samples showed Phragmites.
Okay.
And when I look into the VMRC guidelines, that is, if you're going to develop, it doesn't seem like they care that much about Phragmites, but again, it is a marsh. So we did encroach. So I accept the mitigation plan.
Well, I'm not sure we know what the mitigation plan is going to be at this total juncture.
I did add four slides onto the presentation, and I hired Harold Jones to come up with the a wetland creation plan. He's a engineer. He's formerly an engineer with the Army Corps of Engineers, and has a lot of experience with wetland creation, and he's a wetland scientist. But this is the area that we would create, and again, this is the area directly to the southeast, southwest of the property that we would create.
Do you currently own that property now?
I do.
Okay. Mr. Zedrin has a question for you, sir.
What about the civil penalty of $6,000?
Oh, I was going to get to that next. Vince was out. Was out at our property last week along with Rachel, and they were looking at what would be best for the wetland creation.
Well,
and the
VIMS assessment. Can you get back to the microphone, sir? We need you to yell on the record. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you, Kelsey.
Oh yeah. Okay. So when VIMS was out there last week, as I understand the report, their suggestion is that this boundary. Here, the marsh is obviously out here. Their suggestion is that we get a gentle sloping, rather than have a bathtub area, that this area would be like a gentle slope, so we get a smooth inflow outflow of tides when we went for the higher tides. Separately, we by chance just have this, it's about a 3 or 4 foot wide tributary that connects with the Elizabeth River tributary here. And what the project would do would extend the 3-foot wide channel to this bathtub area and allow the free flow of water in and out to maximize the chances of cordgrass growing in the area. So the mitigation plan is to plant cordgrass, dig down about 2 feet excavation, and then plant cordgrass in there and have an aggressive plan in place to eliminate Phragmites growing in the area. The area would be inspected once a year by a scientist. Next slide. Assessment is that we had a moderate impact. As you see by the cost matrix, would result in a $6,000 civil penalty. My request to the board is that this be assessed as a minimal impact or vice moderate impact. With that decision, it would result in a $2,000 civil penalty vice a $6,000 civil penalty. Based on the following reasons, these are in the guidelines for minimal impact criteria. Small encroachment. So all the encroached marsh area, it's primarily Phragmites. What we're going to replace it with the mitigation plan, is with cordgrass, which is...
Sir, you didn't know what Phragmites was to begin with. It could have been gold out there, for all you knew, when you disturbed it. Okay, continue.
So in the end, we're going to convert 1,400 square foot to wetland. If we follow the BIMS guidelines, it may rise up to about 1,600 square feet that we convert to wetland by the required 1,250. So we're going to give everything back in the following guidelines with the Virginia rules of zero net loss of wetland. Small effect on bottomlands and resources. We're going to put cordgrass in. And then lastly, we think that the final wetland area will be better than what we had in the very beginning. So for those reasons, I request the board permission for a $2,000 assessment, minimal impact with a moderate degree of deviation. I've had two estimates for what the conversion cost would be. The preliminary two estimates I have are right around the $5,000 range, just to do the excavation 2 feet down within that 1,400 square foot area.
Questions? Ms. Ebert?
What did you do an estimated cost for returning it to the prior state?
You mean a removal of the
fill?
Mm-hmm.
And replacement of vegetation that was lost?
No, ma'am.
And may I ask a follow-up question?
Yes, you may.
There's been 1,200 or plus tidal wetlands impacted. Then of the non-tidal wetlands, 1,400 square feet. Then dredging to 2.24 feet for the channel. And I think the certainty of that tidal wetland functioning in a non-tidal area is questionable. According to Vim's letter, if I can speak to that, and from what I know of wetland creation, particularly in this change of habitat, yet you still want to go forward because, can you help me kind of finish that sentence, because you want the backyard as it is? Or
it goes back to the very beginning while we did this project. We're looking, we'll be at this property for a long time, and we're very concerned with the tides getting too close to the crawl space. We were uncomfortable with how close the water was getting, so we felt that keeping this barrier was the best long-term decision for our property.
Thank you.
Further questions? I'm going to be frank with you. I think you went and did what you thought was in the best interest of the property without any concern whatsoever as far as the environment was concerned. Furthermore, believe that your contractor, if he's done this before, should have said something to you as well. I have some concerns, as well as outlined by Ms. Everett during her inquiry, as to whether or not these wetland restoration plans would work, as concerns that Virginia Institute of Marine Science has. And as far as the impact is concerned, although I only break ties, I don't have any support whatsoever. I think this is an egregious violation. I really do. And I'd normally err on folks that try to do the right thing. As you said, the trucks coming up and down the driveway caused unnecessary and unwanted attention. You should have asked for the attention that you needed, which we would have gladly had provided at the time, or Chesapeake would have. That's just my personal opinion. Mr. Zedrin.
The problem I got with it, if you'd come here requesting this, that's one thing, and then we'd worked it out, but after the fact deal, it's like nothing. We can't do nothing about it. It's like it's done. Even if you took and took that spill out and replanted and everything, there's a whole process you got to go through, and nobody knows whether that's going to be successful or not. And so, I would be opposed to changing the civil penalty change to $2,000. And I would like to know the answer to my question again. The question was, will you pay the $6,000? I want to know the answer to that. If we accepted the recommendation of the $6,000 fine, are you going to pay that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Let the record reflect that the individual has agreed to pay the $6,000 civil penalty in lieu of referring the matter to the Office of Attorney General to seek civil penalties pursuant to 28.2.12.13 of the Code of Virginia. All right, we're past that marker that we have agreed for the $6,000. Now, just a minute. Now we need to determine mitigation. What's going to be the mitigation or the restoration plan? Ms. Everett.
I don't know if I'm trying to back up here, but I guess my thought is and maybe this is a question embedded in this, but it looks like even the trees in the non-tidal area were cleared as well. Was that before any kind of permission? To me, this is really concerning, particularly as a precedent that someone could say, I didn't know, and you've not only lost non-tidal wetlands, you may lose tidal wetlands, you're losing forest. I think it's before we set a mitigation plan or
civil penalty as well, because I have been informed by council that we need to take a vote on the $6,000 because it has not been approved by the commission. I got out of line there, Mr. Zedrin. I was ahead of you.
That's
right. So we're still in your same train of thought, so continue on.
Okay, so civil penalty can be independent of if it's allowable to keep or have to restore to the original condition of the site, correct?
Kelsey?
Give me one second. Yeah, if he agrees to pay it, it just says anyone who has violated any provision of the chapter may be issued a one-time civil penalty. So I think the civil penalty is separate from whether or not you're going to allow him to keep it and give him the after-the-fact permit.
I guess my question, Mr. Bowman, is, do we first decide what we'll allow in terms of restoration or mitigation and then determine from there the civil penalty?
You can do it any way you want.
That's what I would recommend.
Both are they're all recommendations made by the staff. And in all due respect, you're the commission. You decide what you want to do and what order you want to do them.
For other commissioners' consideration, I consider potentially maybe as a discussion point, if appropriate, asking to restore the site to the original condition. Sounds like there are resources to do that. And again, it wouldn't allow another homeowner to potentially say, I didn't know, so I did it. I just didn't understand the reasoning there. That wouldn't preclude someone else from doing the same thing.
Is that in the form of a motion?
Yes.
Motion made by Ms. Everett to restore it to its original shape, size, and configuration. Is there a second to the motion?
Can we have a bit of a discussion on that?
Sure you can.
I guess my only worry is, are we going to be doing more harm now? I see exactly what Ms. Everett is saying. This is maybe just the cost of doing business. Home should have been elevated at a higher point, maybe its original construction. So we're helping him with a problem, and the problem is cheaper the way he's done it. I see what you're saying. But I'd like to have some feedback on staff and what they believe. Well, this is could be restored. I mean, because I think, as Ms. Everett says, is it better to restore or to do something that has a low probability of being a wetlands again when we already had a wetlands, you know? Your take?
And if I may add to that, Michelle, obviously he does have a problem as far as the water encroaching. Is there a separate plan that basically would encompass what we're intending to do as far as restoration to as near as possible as we can do, and at the same time, from a wetlands perspective? I mean, I don't want to break a stick over somebody's head, but the bottom line is this is a problem. This is a significant issue, and if the other thing, in all due respect, if we go back to restoring it like the way it was, and then his crawl space is flooded, then he has to come back here and get a permit to go back and fix it.
If we weren't thinking about the impacts that would have on his pocketbook or his time or anything of that sort, or the property, then yes, I think restoration would be exactly what we would be wanting. Trying to take into account that the impacts that it may have on various parts of his life, that's why the recommendation is the way it is. So again, trying to take the environmental and trying to take the human perspective, that's why I came up with that.
Well, In all due respect, I understand that, but what you tried to help him with, he didn't want to do. Okay, Mr. Ballard?
I guess I'd be curious staff's opinion in terms of, I would have been more comfortable with Ms. Everett's motion if we had said restoration or the mitigation bank, because I feel convinced that the mitigation bank will be a successful wetland creation.
I agree.
Do you have enough knowledge or an opinion as to whether this plan would be successful? That's what I remain unconvinced as to, whether this is just a Hail Mary or whether it's actually going to work.
So I'll answer that in two pieces. One, we know that the mitigation bank is going to work. That's because it's been vetted by federal and state and local authority or local managers to make sure that it works. So if you are concerned about the, and we are, the long-term stability of this mitigation area, the bank is where you're going to get it. On-site mitigation, if everything goes perfect, it could work. But the probability that we have seen of on-site mitigation doesn't always guarantee that. And that's why VIMS made those recommendations, to try and get a better revision plan.
And on-site mitigation requires you to monitor, go back and check after a year and do...
Mm-hmm. And it is $21 a square foot. That's why he has heartburn about it.
Well.
Yes.
Ms. Lusk.
I too am pretty uncomfortable with the notion that we're gonna disturb non-tidal wetlands to create tidal wetlands, and that it doesn't. I'm not computing that. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Nor me either.
I would, I don't think I would be willing to support that at this point. But the idea of the wetlands bank, or I guess what we're asking is if it's possible to, earlier in your presentation you said that had the applicant, or had he come and said, this is my problem, what can I do, and gone through the permit process, then there would have been less damage. So is it possible to combine digging out the the mistake and then also fixing the problem at the same time. Those would be, I think, at this point, the only options that I would be willing to support.
That very much is an option for the commission to require removal of the fill. We could come up with a line of where that, we have a line of where we feel the wetlands used to be, and we can take that away. That very much is an option.
Mr. Boone, may
I? Yes, ma'am.
So, for example, there could be a living shoreline there that could help hold some of the potential high flood waters when they come?
Basically, what we would be recommending is that they move this entire fill probably closer to the home, and it would be back here. This fill be removed to the elevation of the marsh and can be replanted, or wetlands plants would probably start growing on their own anyway. So that is very much an option.
I got a question.
Yes, sir, Mr. Zadrin.
I saw you draw that line there closer to the house, but those trees were there forever.
Those trees are no longer there.
There?
As a result of the construction, the heaviness of the equipment had impact on the trees, and the trees aren't there. The Chesapeake Bay Board and City of Chesapeake will be handling mitigation of that.
Wow. Tony, did you have something? Okay, go ahead.
I'd like to ask that gentleman something here.
Please.
Hopefully you're paying attention to what's going on up here in this board, and I don't think anybody's in your favor, okay? So what I'd like to know from you, if we do not require you to remove that fill and stuff like that, would you be willing to go ahead and purchase the mitigation from the mitigation bank and pay the $6,000?
So that would, I think, what is the rate? So 21 times 1250, that's 24, right around 24. Plus another $6,000 for the civil penalty was $30,000.
Well, understand that we can rule, if the board decides here, that we can rule that you got to take all that stuff out, okay, rebuild the wetlands, and still pay the $6,000. So there's where you're at.
So if I understand your question correctly, am I willing to pay the mitigation bank the $26,000 plus?
$26,250
plus another.
Six would be $32,250.
And then understand it, if you have to take that out and it's got to be regraded and everything like that, you're not going to have any protection from the water.
This whole project was very costly. Can I think about that for a minute, sir?
Mr. Ballard.
I was just going to suggest that as a board, we think I have issue putting him on the spot and giving him, make him come up with answers right there. But I would be in favor of a friendly amendment to Ms. Everett's motion a couple minutes back of complete restoration or purchasing credits from the mitigation bank. I think those are the only two options I feel comfortable with at this point. And then when it comes around to the civil penalty, if I'm understanding our
second part of that
right, I would be in favor of the $6,000 charge.
Commissioner Bowman, may I ask a...
I'm sorry?
I think Tony had something.
I just...
Can we move this thing? This is getting a little bifurcated. Let's.
Fear of making things complicated. I just want to say one thing that
traditionally it's been the policy of staff, and I think it's happened at the commission level as well. We've gotten total restoration and something's been returned to existing conditions. We typically have a charge, maybe civil charges. Now, it's not to say I'm disagreeing with the council that we can't do that. I think we can. I think you can do both. So we have not gone the civil charge route if we've gotten restoration. In fact, at the staff level, we oftentimes work with folks. They restore it, the result, the violation's resolved, doesn't even come to you. That's not the case here. The other technicality is if we go the restoration route, I would be interested in Kelsey letting us know if we think we need to provide a 30-day notice and hold a restoration hearing at the next commission meeting. And this would be Section D of 28.2.13.17. I mean, we've been going through this for a year, 2 years now, and we're finally at the commission. So Mr. Reckonball's known we were facing this, but we didn't.
Let me ask you this. Can we continue it to the next commission meeting and you work with Mr. Reckonball and you come back with us after working with Mr. Reckonball?
And see what he might be interested in doing, given your comments today. We can certainly do that.
What's the pleasure of the commission on that?
I think it sounds like a good idea. I don't like putting things off, but this sounds like a good time to do it.
Not going anywhere.
No. Motion to continue to the next meeting. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
What, Ms. Everett?
May I make a comment?
Yes,
absolutely.
I think I'm very interested in what Rachel had mentioned about the living shoreline possibility, where you have a solution for the landowner and the property as well as the environment. So I'd love for staff to look at the possibilities of that.
I don't know that living shoreline would be
in that area.
In this area, given circumstances, I think. If we get restoration, the idea is it returns the filled area to wetlands. And then the only protection he could provide is working in his previously existing upland yard and stabilizing that interface without going into the
same result. So, okay. I just wanted to.
And during the course of the discussions, please keep us informed on what the Chesapeake Bay Board is doing as far as that's concerned as well. Rachel's jumping up behind you, too. Not yet. Rachel, what'd you hear?
The CBPA board has been very specific that they don't want to do anything until we come up with.
Okay, well.
So right. We won't hear from them until we make.
That's fine. Motion to continue. Motion made by Ms. Everett to continue. Is there a second?
So moved.
Second by Mr. Tank. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Continued until next month. If you should need longer than next month, if you should need longer than next month, you let me know, and I'll be glad to communicate that with members of the commission. Otherwise, we'll be back here. When's the next meeting for next? The 30th of October. Okay.
And the contractor here, are we going to have any discourse with him at some point?
Mr. Reckonbach can probably answer. That was the initial question. Who is the contractor? And Mr. Reckonbaugh will say he would like to not hold him accountable. He would like to take the accountability for the contractor's work.
I think I get it. In other words, he authorized the contractor to do the work. Correct? Okay. Mr. Taggart, that's satisfied with you as far as the final decision-making is concerned?
Yeah, it is problematic that you'd have a contractor who's in our area, who's obviously doing this kind of work, who would believe that it would still be okay.
Unless it's a contractor that does not normally do this work, who is hired by the, and then said, this is what I want to be done. We'll ferret all this out.
Okay.
Thank you. Continue to the 30th.